Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
My beard was scratching against the pop filter. I'm so sorry. My beard was scratching against the pop filter.
Can we get somebody else in here? I've decided to replace you.
Oh no, because of my scratchy beard and how it's always rubbing against the pop filter and making unseemly scratchy noises?
Exactly that reason.
Listen, I was trying to show off my incredible beard.
Incredible beard. Hi. This is Rachel McElroy.
Hello, this is Griffin McElroy.
And this is wonderful.
And this is a show where, oh, dang it, it's doing it again, this big, lustrous freaking beard. I'm so sorry, everybody. This is embarrassing. It never happens. Tell everyone about the beard. It's pretty remarkable, isn't it? I don't know why I've chosen to highlight it.
The beard is not something I had really noticed until immediately after you said that there was a beard. So that's about where we're at, I think.
Wow. Maybe we should bring someone else in. We should bring in Henry. And he could take my spot because you would never disrespect him.
He doesn't have a beard.
That's true. He would make a lot of other, I would say, unprofessional noises, though, that you would have to contend with.
And then he's entering his poop period.
He's really exploring his poop phase right now.
In that it is the funniest word he knows, and so he inserts it as if it is a joke by itself.
Yeah, and he likes to just sort of like, I'll say like, I love you, son. And he will look back up at me and say, I love you, poop. And then that's pretty good. That's not the medium in which you find comedy most of the time, but
somehow he got the impression that being funny is a very valued quality in this house.
Don't get it. I don't understand.
I don't know how it happened.
This is a wonderful show where we talk about things that we are into, things that are good, things we're excited about. You got any of those small wonders?
Why don't you go first?
My small wonder is a bit of a heavy one, but we just watched 13th, which is on Netflix right now, which is a documentary all about systemic racism, specifically in with regards to the for-profit prison system in the country. It is an extremely challenging film to watch, but I think right now it's a very necessary one, and it is
done really beautifully in that it kind of helps you stay rooted in the time period as you're watching it. And so you really see the progression and how it happens and what the factors are in it happening.
Yeah. And it's even if you are like the type of person that is like fully cognizant of the fact that systemic racism exists, it is a sort of like staggering look at how it has metastasized and like changed form sort of maliciously to survive. And it's very difficult to watch, but I think that if you are trying to, you know, stay educated while, you know, seeing all of these remarkable protests against police violence and violence against Black communities, like it's a really remarkable film. I would encourage you to watch that if you are looking for more educational resources. And I realize now I have set you up to fail.
Yeah, right.
If you bring something like hot, like Nathan's hot dogs.
I was actually going to reference, and this is not a paid advertisement. There is, I imagine, one of these in most areas.
Oh boy.
We have kind of like a CSA box system. Ours is called Farmhouse Delivery.
Oh yeah.
I think CSA is the right way to refer to it. A lot of people get like a local produce box delivered to their house.
Right.
This is kind of similar to that, except it's all sorts of local Texas goods.
True.
So I can get like a salsa, I can get like a frozen pizza. It's all like local companies that have decided to distribute their goods this way. And so every week we get one and it is the best.
It is really good, especially since, you know, going to the grocery store is not an appealing idea right now. And so getting like, you know, stuff that people made and stuff that people are like really like products they are enthusiastic about and passionate about is like very, very
cool. Yeah, and it's helped us kind of try things that we wouldn't have otherwise tried. It's kind of like when you go to a grocery store and they have only like two options for a particular food. And so you end up kind of dipping into stuff that you wouldn't normally eat.
There are carrots in this box that would
Oh, these fucking carrots.
Curl your toes, these carrots would.
Oh, these carrots.
Because of the flavor of them. Not because they grew in a particularly like phallic shape or anything like that. That's probably not where, there are probably, I would say 6% of our audience that went there with it. But I wanted to gently nudge them back towards towards the light of the Lord. I go first this week.
Great.
I'm gonna change the order of mine because one of the things that I want to talk about is inspired by a product that we receive in this remarkable little farmhouse box. It is the Humble Oatmeal Cream Pie. This is the sandwich with oatmeal cookies on either side of it and cream right the hell there in the middle.
This is dangerous, isn't it?
Why?
Just because it's so bad, you know?
What?
Well, just like it's not necessarily a healthy or nutritious food.
It's got oatmeal in it. Are you kidding me?
Oh, there you go.
It's got oatmeal in it. There are way worse things that
I'm
you
just
can
saying,
eat.
At one point you specifically suggested that maybe I stop buying these because we were compulsively eating them.
That is true. It is. Yeah, they are sort of undeniable. Mm-hmm. They are extremely powerful. I wanted to talk a little bit about my relationship with Little Debbie brand.
Please.
When I was a youngster, you know, I was the third child, and we were of sort of an age range that we were like all in school, and we had two, you know, parents working full-time jobs. And so like, I want to say around like fourth or fifth grade, I started to pack my own lunch in the mornings because that's, you know, that's a lot of boys to prep. In the morning time. So my lunch, this was a critical mistake from my parents, giving me this level of freedom. I'm not proud of my lunch that I had for a great deal of my youth, but it contained the following. It would have a Ziploc bag of chips, usually not a very big bag, like a small bag of chips, usually Snyder's chips. I don't know if that's a brand that exists outside of West Virginia, but just regular old potato chips. I would have a can of Sam's Club off-brand soda. So like Dr. Lightning. You're shaking your head already.
Oh, I'm just dismayed. Continue.
Sometimes I would have a sandwich in there. Sometimes I would put a sandwich in there. The sandwich was either peanut butter and honey or pepperoni and mustard.
Oh, Griffin.
This was the heat I had. And then it would also have a Little Debbie in there.
Is pepperoni and mustard a thing that people have eaten?
I mean, if you think about like there's a lot of Italian sandwiches that are
okay.
You know, those types of meats.
Okay.
With a mustard or something on top. Usually there's, you know, other stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Not just pepperoni and mustard. God, I loved pepperoni growing up. I would make little pepperoni rolls in the microwave myself, which is basically just I would put pepperoni in bread and just fucking wad it up. Now, what did I fuck with, right? What kind of Little Debbies did I bring to the table? You're probably thinking oatmeal cream pies, right? Since that's the subject of it.
Yeah.
No. I did not like an oatmeal cream pie growing up. I did not respect the oatmeal cream pie. And in fact, they ranked pretty low on the tier list for me. It is only since I have grown to older and my palate is more refined that I really appreciate an oatmeal cream pie.
It's too complex a taste for you as a child.
It wasn't complex. It wasn't complex enough is the honest truth. It wasn't, if I'm being frank, chocolatey enough. And then while I was putting the notes together for this segment, I went off on a huge tangent here and I did provide a definitive ranking of Little Debbie snack archetypes. From the perspective of like elementary school Griffin, because this list has changed now, but obviously in the top slot you have the brownie family, the cosmic brownies, the zebra brownies.
Oh, see, I was going to say the Nutty Buddy.
The Nutty Buddy,
is that not Little Debbie?
Nutty Buddy ranks in at number 8 for me.
Whoa, Griff.
Yeah, the Nutty Buddy, like peanut butter crunch bars.
I disagree.
Okay, well, let me keep going. Number 2, we have the cake family, zebra cakes, fancy cakes, etc. I loved a fancy cake. Then you have the cupcakes, like the chocolate, just like one with the swirl on the top, or cosmic cupcakes, not as good as cosmic brownies. Number 4, fudge rounds. Ooh, fudge rounds, though. Can you at least get on the fudge round train with me? It's like a chocolate oatmeal cream pie, so it was like, in my mind,
I don't know
better.
That I've ever had one. Continue.
Oh, my God. Number 5, Star Crunch.
Yeah.
What?
This may not shock you to hear that my family did not purchase these items.
Well, they thought you were allergic to chocolate.
That is
based
true.
On nothing for pretty much
well,
your entire...
Well, based on a doctor actually suggesting that was the case.
Right. Number 6, honey buns. Ooh, I still go crazy for a honey bun. Number seven, I don't know why this ranks so low. It should be much higher, but pecan spin wheels. I would unroll those things.
I have had those.
I would eat that like a fucking pecan fruit by the foot.
Yes.
Those were good as hell. Eight, of course, Nutty Buddy peanut butter crunch bars. Number nine, caramel cookie bars. Hey, nice try, Little Debbie. This is just a flat Twix. This is just a broad Twix. So, and then number 10, oatmeal cream pies would barely made the list. But now, like, I would flip that whole thing, I think, on its ear.
Yeah.
I think a cosmic brownie would put me into, like, a coma at this point. I don't think I would enjoy that experience.
I want you to think back to this time period where you were making your own lunch. Did you notice some kind of lethargy that showed up in your afternoon times, maybe after lunch?
I mean, it was so, I mean, you drink a, what was it called? Like a Mountain Lightning, and you eat a cosmic brownie and eat a peanut butter and honey sandwich. That's going to provide you enough energy to get you from, you know, 11:30, where you eat the lunch, to about 3:15 p.m.
I can't imagine.
And then I would get home and just sort of fade out.
Do you know, were your brothers doing the same thing? Did you ever have them?
I don't know
over?
What my brothers were eating. I do not know. Anyway, then Jamie Oliver came to West Virginia and fixed us all. Thank you, Jamie. So the oatmeal cream pie was the original Little Debbie snack. In 1935, O.D. McKee, who was the founder of the company, had this bad recipe for hard-ass oatmeal cookies that nobody liked. And so he started to figure out, like, hey, can I make these bad boys softer? And then he did. And then I guess he was, like, struck by lightning or visited by an angel or something, because then he had the idea to put cream in between these beautiful soft bastards. And the oatmeal cream pie was born, and they would sell them for a nickel a piece. And the rest was history. A nickel a piece, can you imagine?
Those were the days.
Those were the days when you could just get a 5-cent oatmeal cream pie. They are not the healthiest food. They do give you, I wrote down, 4% of your daily iron and 1% of your daily potassium. So... and then I guess the reason that this is obviously coming up is because we have gotten them in this farmhouse box and they're incredible. But I also have just like recently come to the realization that you can just make these. They're literally just two oatmeal cookies with some buttercream between them.
Yeah.
You can just make them.
We could do that.
We could do that.
Uh-huh.
And I think that that's an exciting idea. I have on the notes here that we get them in this incredible box, and they're really good. Mm-hmm. And I love oatmeal cream pies, and they are like the dessert that I'm most enthusiastic about right now. And I would ask you to respect that. What's your first thing?
Okay, my first thing is kind of a surprise to me.
Oh boy.
I think I like celebrity fragrances.
The concept or the scent?
Well.
Oh, no.
I have a tester here for you.
Oh, no. Wait, are you going to... Why do you have a celebrity fragrance?
I was doing a little research on celebrity fragrances, and I became very intrigued.
Okay, you know that my brother Travis is, like, obsessed with the concept of celebrity fragrances, right?
I didn't know that. Has he talked
like
about this?
He is, like, an acolyte of...
Is this one of his games?
No, this is not one of his games. He has many games. I'm sure it will show up eventually. So you want me to smell this and tell you...
I just want you to smell it.
And then you want me to tell you what celebrity it is?
Oh, I mean, you can do that. I just want you to smell it and see that it is, in fact, not a bad smell.
How should I...
Just stick your nose. Don't spritz it.
Oh.
It's kind of nice, right? What do you think?
I'm getting a... I'm getting a Kelly Clarkson?
No, not at all.
Is this a... is this Taraji P. Henson?
No.
Who is that?
Sarah Jessica Parker.
Oh, that was going to be my next guess. Why do you have SJP's smell, babe?
Well, okay, so here's the thing. So I was researching. I guess, like Travis, found it very intriguing, and I was reading about it, and I decided I would just invest in a celebrity fragrance just to see what all the fuss was about. And I read the notes.
Yeah.
You know how they give you the notes? I tend to like a patchouli smell. And I know what that says about me. and so I saw that was listed as one of the notes, and then I purchased it, and here we are.
I'm excited to learn more. I have to ask, are you mostly just fascinated with the concept of a person being forced to identify their smell?
A little bit. Just the process is kind of fascinating to me.
Can I ask you, and I know you've just identified patchouli notes, and maybe we should save this for the end of your segment, but what the Rachel scent is, the scent of a Rachel.
Oh, gosh. I mean, I would have to know. I like something that is more citrusy. I also looked at a Jennifer Aniston fragrance. She does a lot of beachy options.
See, I was weirdly, you are not like a beach bum, but from you, yeah. I am getting a sort of outdoor scent, like when you come inside from not like sweat or stink or musk or anything like that, but just like the scent of outdoors with like a little bit of, I'm getting like a grapefruit.
Exactly.
Off of you?
Yeah, I like a citrus. I have a body wash right now that is grapefruit.
Oh, that's cheating because I have used it in a pinch. It's nice. It's good nice. Stuff. Yeah.
I did a little research. There is a company called Coty that does a lot of the COTY because they kind of give you a process as a celebrity to easily create a fragrance. Celebrities that have used Coty include David Beckham, Halle Berry, Beyonce, Faith Hill, Lady Gaga, J-Lo, Madonna, Tim McGraw, Kylie Minogue, Rihanna, Gwen Stefani.
Okay. All of those people? Like I was
have
waiting.
Used this one company.
I was waiting for the outlier there where I'd be like, they have a scent, but all of those people.
Tim McGraw? That one surprised me a little.
Yeah, bud. Yeah, bud. Tim McGraw for sure has a scent.
Fragrances actually started. I was looking. There is a whole Wikipedia page that lists out celebrity fragrances. It is not comprehensive. But it gives you kind of a good idea of when it all started, which was in the 80s with Cher and Michael Jackson.
Okay. They were the first two to have their own scents?
I mean, I can't say that confidently, but that was what my research indicated.
I could see Cher being at the vanguard of that.
And then in the 90s, Michael Jordan. Do you remember this Michael Jordan cologne?
Of course I do. Every yes, everybody I feel like knew about that.
Also White Diamonds by Elizabeth Taylor.
Yep. But that was just because of the fucking commercials that were just nonstop.
It came out in 1991. It has grossed close to $2 billion.
I feel like I can see that commercial in my mind. And when I do think about that commercial in my mind, it's like kind of, and I apologize to everybody, but like, it's like overwhelmingly erotic. Like the commercial was like laying it on thick.
It's very gauzy, in that there is a lot of like drapery.
There's a lot
that she walks through.
It's sort of boudoir-y, if memory serves. And I don't know if I'm sort of emphasizing that because of the era that it came out in and my age and sort of my relationship with puberty necessarily.
Yeah, this was as close as you could get to something that was boudoir-y at the time, I imagine. So here's the thing that I also am kind of fascinated by, is that it's not unusual for a celebrity to make multiple fragrances.
Hmm.
Apparently, and I saw this on multiple sites, Jennifer Lopez has 25 fragrances.
Holy shit.
Paris Hilton, 26. Britney Spears, 27.
Wow.
I know.
That's incredible? So many. Okay, at a certain point, though, that it stops being like, okay, if I catch a whiff of you wearing the Sarah Jessica Parker scent, I'm going to think, like, that's what Sarah Jessica Parker thinks she smells like or would like people to think that she smells like. When you put out 27 fragrances, like, what are you saying? Are you saying, like, this is Britney on, a warm day on the boardwalk? This is Britney in the ski lodge. You know what I mean? Like, are these different shades of Britney, or is Britney just saying, hey, here's a good stink that I think you would like?
Well, so, and I was reading a little bit about how this process works. I couldn't find like a great reliable source, but what I did find was a suggestion that the perfume company like Coty might approach the celebrity, or the celebrity approaches them. And they develop a brief. A creative team will sit down and create a brief, which is just kind of instructions to the perfumer on the types of things to like
what a
hit
on. Strange little world.
So it can be a sentence. It can be several pages. It could also just be a picture or a video of like, this is who we're designing this for. Now put some ideas together. And then the celebrity just has to show up, smell a few things, and say, I like that one.
Pretty cool gig. Good work if you can get it.
And then potentially make $1 billion, which is incredible.
I think I would go in like full-blown Villanelle, like I want to smell like power.
Can I tell you something? So I was looking through this website that listed all the different celebrity fragrances. John Hodgman has one called Whale. Isn't that incredible?
It's so good.
I couldn't find any details on it, really.
I have to imagine there's a sort of nautical focus there.
Apparently came out in 2013.
Mm.
It's funny because there's a list of all the celebrities and their occupations.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, singer, footballer, actor.
What's it Clark Hodgman as?
Humorist. Yeah, he's got to be the only, I didn't look for sure, but he's got to be the only humorist on the list.
Oh, shit. The Gene Shepherd stink. I'm going to love this one.
There have also been some fragrances that were not as successful. Apparently, in 2015, Pitbull released a fragrance called Miami that was not particularly
popular.
I have
to imagine Pitbull has gotten back up on the horse since then, though, right?
You know, I haven't looked. Let me look and see if there's a multiple for him.
There's got to be. While you're searching that.
No, I'm not seeing one.
Mm, okay. Well, maybe that's a project that I could approach. I've been looking for a reason to collaborate with Pitbull for a while. Mm-hmm. In a non-insulting answer, what do you think my smell would be? And there is a correct answer.
Oh.
Non-insulting.
Non-insulting. I'm trying to think. I feel like you like a woodsy smell.
I do, yeah. I enjoy natural scents,
uh-huh.
as one way of putting it, sure.
Uh-huh.
But that's
Did you have something in mind?
It would just be Old Spice Pure Sport.
You have dipped into the fragrance. We've talked about this on the show.
This is true. I'm not going to give them free advertisement, but I got a Facebook ad for like a solid wax cologne that I wear. Like I wear like every day now.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, I like it too. It's nice to smell good. I finally get it.
I had been kind of being lax on my fragrance since I've been at home.
Mm.
But then I decided...
I've been meaning to say something.
Maybe I should get back into it.
I wouldn't say you've been lax on your fragrance. It's just that you don't choose the fragrance you get. Your body just kind of chooses it for you.
Uh-huh.
You. Like, everybody has a fragrance at all times. Do you know what I mean?
No, that's true. That's true. So, I mean, I would just encourage... everyone to check these out. Bruce Willis has a fragrance that is just called Bruce Willis.
He didn't call it Bruno?
No.
What a missed opportunity. I want to smell like jazz man Bruno.
Oh, for those that are wondering, the Sarah Jessica Parker fragrance is lovely, but she also has other ones.
No doubt. Yeah, no
called,
doubt.
Called like Stash and Covet.
Oh, those are good names.
Nicki Minaj, of course, has several. Rob Lowe has one. It's exciting to look at, to learn about. I would recommend it.
Let's play a game.
Okay,
we'll go back and forth. First one to stall loses, and I want you to come up with a one word name for different celebrity colognes.
Oh, okay, let's do it.
Secrets.
Wait, so I have to say the celebrity?
No, just a name, a one word incredible cologne name.
Oh, okay. Blade.
Blade?
Mm-hmm.
Whose cologne is Blade? If you Wesley Snipes, I guess. I'm Wesley Snipes. This is my Blade cologne. It's my licensed merchandise from the Blade franchise. Scandal. Scandalicious. Scandal, based on the TV show Scandal.
Does it have to be one word?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Wow. You're pretty certain about this. I'm going to say spa.
Spa is good.
Mm-hmm.
Spar. It's like spa.
Ooh, I like that.
This one's like a, ooh.
I like that.
Spar
ooh.
Is good.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
That makes me want to do conflict.
Conflict is, we're getting a little bit out of violence.
Murder.
How to get away with murder based on the TV show. Hey, can I steal you away?
Yes. Okay, we have Jumbotrons.
All right.
This first one is for Beck. It is from Gina. Thank you for introducing me to everything McElroy, for always listening to my ramblings about grad school stress and gay anxiety, and for being my best friend and wonderful thing every week. I love you, and I hope future you is living your best life, hopefully on island time.
Probably Unless it's a private island situation. I mean, there are people living on islands now, safely, responsibly, and that's good.
And people that live in proximity to islands so that they could perhaps take a boat.
You could live on island time also in your own home.
That's true. Get one of those signs from Home Goods.
Wow, that sentence. Get a sign that says
like island time and put it on your wall.
And you get that from Home Goods.
Yeah. That's a store, right? I think so.
And you're saying you just sort of be near this sign and it.
It's like an order.
It's like a command that you have to follow.
You know, have you ever been in like a vacation rental and they have a lot of...
Have I been inside a vacation rental with an iconic sign on it? I don't know. Have I, Peepus Room? Yes. Here's a Yahoo. Or a, Jesus Christ, babe. This week, I tell you, bud. Oof, really getting away from me. But here's a Jumbotron that is for Kayla from Philippe, who says, "To my dearest Kayla Bela, happy anniversary. This first year of marriage has been incredible. You make me happier than I ever thought I could be, and I can't wait to continue binging shows, playing with our dog Shelber Belber, and making wok popcorn with my favorite person in the whole world. I love you so much." Babe, this next part, Philippe said, "I don't want you to get like, I know you get jealous. I know you get angry when you get jealous." Philippe said this. "P.S. You got a nice butt." That was Philippe saying that.
Now, would I be angry because the suggestion is that maybe you are saying this or the fact that somebody else might also have a nice butt? And I would be upset by the competition.
Yes, that is possible.
Macho man to the top rope. The flying elbow. The cover. We've got a new champion.
We're here with Macho Man Randy Savage after his big win to become the new world champion. What are you going to do now, Match?
I'm going to go listen to the newest episode of the Tights and Fights podcast, oh yeah.
Tell us more about this podcast.
It's the podcast of power, too sweet to be sour, funky like a monkey, woke discussions, man, and jokes about wrestlers' fashion choices, myself excluded, yeah.
I can't wait to listen.
Neither can I. You can find it Thursdays on Maximum Fun. Oh, yeah, dig it.
Can I tell you about my second thing?
Please do.
My second thing is a show that anyone can watch on, well, I guess if you have access to Netflix. That show is I Think You Should Leave with Tim Robinson. And I wanted to talk about this. It's a comedy sketch show. There's 6 episodes of it, and it's fucking great. And, like... I think like pound for pound, I would put it in like the comedy pantheon of like Nathan For You, just like must see comedy TV.
It didn't occur to me that everybody wasn't watching this until we talked to some of our friends and they're like, "What is this?" None of them watched
it. So, and this is why I wanted to talk about it is like there is a weird phenomenon, and I don't think I'm telling tales out of school here, where like when there is a prestige drama, like everybody watch, like when we were watching Breaking Bad, fucking everybody was watching Breaking Bad. When I was watching Game of Thrones, it was this cultural phenomenon where every single person on the planet watched Game of Thrones, right? And I don't think this necessarily qualifies for Game of Thrones because I don't necessarily think that that was a great show, but these like prestige dramas are like mandatory in a way that I feel like comedies are not, like outside of like the 90s NBC sitcom era. Like these days, I feel like when there is a show that is critically widely regarded as like perfectly funny, like a Nathan For You, it doesn't have that like penetration that a prestige drama does.
There are a lot of people in comedy right now that talk about how it is difficult to promote a comedy these days, just because people are not getting their comedy the way they used to. I feel like a lot of people do, sure. You know,
podcasts,
yeah,
and all kinds of other stuff. Well, yeah, and I guess I'm like working this out as I am talking to you, so I'm probably gonna bloviate a bit, but like comedy is more subjective than drama, right? Like there are the things that you find exciting or emotionally impactful, like there is a fairly narrow street that you can go down mm-hmm. to like achieve those things. So you watch a Breaking Bad and more people are going to find it like exciting and emotionally impactful, while comedy is like pretty subjective. I feel like when we watched Nathan For You and we're like, this is the fucking best, funniest show ever, and then tried to get Justin to watch it and the like anxiety of it made it an unwatchable show for him. I guess maybe that's part of it. Anyway, I Think You Should Leave with Tim Robinson is it's incredible. It's like probably my favorite sketch comedy thing. Even though it only has 6 episodes, the hit rate on it is like unbelievable.
Yeah.
I would posit that like SNL in its prime didn't have the like hit rate that I Think You Should Leave.
I think Key and Peele has a
Key and Peele is a really I would good for hit rate. Sure put Key and Peele up there.
Yeah.
So Tim Robinson is a comedian who has had like a few roles on various comedy things throughout the years. He was a featured player for a season on SNL and then got moved to a staff writing position. He was only the second SNL cast member to ever make that move from featured player to a staff writer, which I thought was interesting. The other big thing that he has done that we have been watching lately, which is on Comedy Central, it had one season back in 2017, I want to say, is a show called Detroiters, which he does with another comedian named Sam Richardson, that is so fucking good and funny and pure. And if you're looking for another recommendation and you've already watched I Think You Should Leave.
Yeah, we just started watching it.
Wow, it's good. It's the two of them are just sort of down on their luck ad execs of like a small local commercial
ad
company.
Tim Robinson's character like inherited his father's company and they're trying to like keep it going.
And they just like make bad local, it is a show about bad local TV commercials, which apparently are also based on a lot of actual Detroit local ads, because they both grew up in the Detroit area.
That's what is so charming about it, is they both grew up in Detroit and you can tell they both love Detroit.
It's so good.
And so it's just kind of so charming the way they like pay homage to the city in the show.
It's a weirdly loving show too. Like their relationship is like very sweet. Sam Richardson also shows up in, I realized this as we started watching Detroiters, he shows up in like 3 or 4 different I Think You Should Leave sketches.
Yeah, I figured as much.
So every episode of I Think You Should Leave has like 4 or 5 sketches in them. And again, like almost all of them are like poop my pants funny, like very, very, very good. And there's like an element of, I would say, like Tim and Eric-y sort of absurdism going on.
Yeah.
But it doesn't like only rely on that. And it doesn't rely on sort of like out of control like editing or anything sort of like meta like that. It is just sort of like, it's just really funny sketches.
I will say there is a little bit of poop humor in there, which can be challenging for some sometimes,
but there is a consistency to the poop humor and to everything. Yeah. Like, and I think that's what sets it apart from like a Tim and Eric thing where and I love Tim and Eric, I'm not shitting on them, but like there is a consistency to the world that I Think You Should Leave puts together, as evidenced by the fact that whenever they do reference poop, I'm sorry, Rachel, they do refer to it as mud pies just for some reason. It is just like this bizarro other realm that this show takes place in.
Exactly.
But that bizarro other realm has rules that are sort of immutable. And I think that is like just really, really very, very funny. The show's also executive produced by The Lonely Island, which I did not realize.
Oh.
But that makes a whole hell of a lot of sense.
Yeah, it is not unusual to see a Saturday Night Live cast member appear in one of the sketches. So you can tell that he must have made an impact while there.
Here's the thing. There's nothing funny about talking about a funny show. So like I could reference the sketch that Andy Samberg is in where they're on like a pilot episode of a game show where they don't know who the villain, the whammy like villain is supposed to be or what he's supposed to do. So he just kind of comes out and harasses Andy Samberg. But like, I think there's actually a couple of sketches from this show that I can play audio clips from that will still get across what are so good. One that I am incredibly fond of is a recreation of that one scene from Walk the Line, the Johnny Cash movie with Joaquin Phoenix, where he is like auditioning for a record deal in front of some record execs and plays some gospel music because that's like the music everybody was playing, and the record execs turn him down and say like, hey, nobody's buying gospel records anymore. And just as the band's packing up, Johnny Cash improvises you know, this Folsom Prison blues-esque Johnny Cash tune. There's a sketch that I think you should leave where it's basically that, just literally shot for shot, except Tim Robinson is the fake Johnny Cash's bassist, who also jumps in on the improvisation. I'm going to play a clip from that now.
He cocked that crooked hammer back and he brought that hammer down.
Exactly. The bones are the skeleton's money. In our world, bones equal dollars. That's why they're coming out tonight to get their bones from you. The skeletons will pull your hair up, but not out. All they want's another chance at life. They've never seen so much food as this.
It's a very memeable show, which I didn't really appreciate until very recently. And this sketch, the day Robert Palin's murdered me, I feel like I see a lot of discussion of the bones are their money. It is very, very good. I can't add anything on top of it that will make it more entertaining or anything. But the other one that is literally, I think it's the very first like sketch in the very first episode, or maybe the second sketch, it's a take on a local ad for a law firm, of like one of those old, and you don't see him as much anymore, but like, has this ever happened to you?
I feel like you definitely still see them. We just don't watch a lot of daytime TV.
Well, I see a lot of like accident lawyers just like, hey, I'm Thomas J. Henry and I got $55 billion from this one trucker. Come get your money. But like, it's just shot like that, like an accidental injury firm of just like, have you ever bought a house and then you found out it had termites? And then the exterminators show up and they just take turns going in and out of your bathroom for 2 hours. And it just spirals out of control.
And then they get really serious. They say it's turbo time. And they both start running around the house as fast as they can and jumping over the couches. But when you try and jump in, they yell at you and they say, you're not part of the turbo team. Don't run. You don't run with us. We're the ones who run. Until you're part of this turbo team, walk slowly.
It's very good.
I don't know. I feel like I wanted to bring this up, first of all, because I really enjoy it. I think it's a very, very funny show. But it also like kind of made me realize when we were talking to our friends and none of them had watched it, that weird thing that happens where there's just not as much commonality there.
So much of like whether or not a Netflix show gets traction is like based on that little square icon, right? Like, I feel like a lot of times what you see in that little icon and whatever little trailer pops up is what makes you decide if you watch it or not.
But is it bigger than just what platform it's on, right? Like, maybe, I don't know, you could probably make an argument that like Comedy Central has a pretty terrible app, and I don't know how many people have cable or whatever and are watching Comedy Central. I assume there's quite a few people, but like, Chappelle's Show is another one that like everybody watched Chappelle's Show when Chappelle's Show was on.
Well, here's the thing. If it was called the Tim Robinson Sketch Show,
you think it would?
People might see it and be like, I like sketch comedy. Maybe. And click on it.
Yeah. I don't know. I think you should leave. Go watch it. It's so good. What's your second thing?
My second thing is a artist named Mariba.
I had never heard of Mariba until you sent me a YouTube link. The song you're going to talk
about. I was watching a video from Spillage Village, and she has collaborated with that band, and she was kind of a standout in the video I was watching, so I started looking into her. Her name, so I said Mariba because that's how it's commonly pronounced in the States, but her name actually, it's her last name, so her name is Marion Mareba.
Okay.
And she's just kind of accepted Mariba because that tends to be the pronunciation. Her father is Ethiopian, and so that part of her heritage is part of the reason that she has adopted that name, because it's a word that's in that language.
Sure.
So she is 29, and she has lived kind of all over the place, born in Alabama, lived in Greensboro, North Carolina, Georgia, and then did spend some time in Ethiopia. She started as kind of a folk artist.
Hmm.
She was very inspired by artists like Joni Mitchell, Bob Dylan. And it was only when she spent time in Ethiopia and came back and started rethinking like her heritage and her connection to Black music, that she really started working on her own Beats and started using Ableton to make her own music.
I like Ableton.
Which, yeah, I thought you'd be excited about.
I am.
So her album that I was listening to is called The Jungle is the Only Way Out. She said in an interview, quote, "The jungle is so many different things. I came up with the album title while walking to the train one day on the way to my old day job. I felt like my life as I knew it was in the midst of falling apart. A lot of what I held on to for stability was changing around me. But I also felt strangely empowered by the chaos, almost like it was daring me to make it out alive and prosper. It just clicked. The only way out of this chapter of my life is through it. The jungle represents that chaos, confusion, and mystery." She is a very poetic person.
Oh, and for sure.
The album has a lot of spoken word moments on it. And you can listen to the album, which is kind of like a mixture of like R&B and blues. And then there is some folk and soul and hip hop. There's a lot of different influences. In interviews, she said that she was very inspired by like Tracy Chapman and Lauryn Hill and Stevie Nicks. And you'll hear kind of a lot of that in the album. But I wanted to play the song Heatwave. You better run, run, run like a demon chasing you. Run, run till your face is blue. Run, run for your mama's sake. Run, run. Long summer, long summer, long summer, long summer. It's gonna be a heatwave. A long summer, all summer, all winters like summer. This song actually came out with the album in 2019, but is obviously very applicable.
Extremely relevant right
now. For these times, the song is about police brutality against Black people in America. And if you're interested, you should watch the video because it is incredible and addresses a lot of what, you know, was going on at the time and continues to go on now.
Right.
It's a song that features Black and the artist Black. And has like a really great kind of beat and also kind of like a summer like jam quality, but is obviously about a very serious subject.
Yeah.
And I just can't stop listening to it.
Yeah, there's something sort of, I guess, kind of dissonant about the idea of like a powerful song about an incredibly important subject that is also like you can't get out of your head, because I've had that long summer hook like in my head forever. I feel like the same thing happened with This Is America, where you know, you hear it and it's so fucking like impactful and kind of like staggering, but then like the whole time you have that just the hook stuck in your head. I guess it's like the mark of an incredibly successful song.
So she has lived in Atlanta and collaborated with a lot of people out of Atlanta, so it's not unusual to find her on other tracks, but this album just came out in 2019 is really exciting. She's just kind of at the beginning of her career, and this is another one of those artists where I am excited to see what happens next with her.
Rachel's hot watch. There's not a good name.
I'm just trying to do the thing that we did with Lizzo, where we mentioned her, and then totally unrelated to us mentioning her, she became a huge hit, and we got to say we were there on the ground floor.
Right. Even though we were pretty, we were not at all.
Yeah, she had been around for a long time.
Hey, I got some submissions from our friends at home. You want to hear them?
Yes, please.
Here's one from Mary, who says, "My small wonder is that satisfying click when you snip something with sharp scissors. It could be a loose thread, fresh flowers, or even trimming hair. It always makes me happy to hear that little clip sound." I think there's a reason why that is like the original ASMR sort of track. I think like the history of ASMR, I feel like, dates back to a very old recording of somebody like doing a haircut and binaural sort of sound. I remember listening to something like that at like Kosai when I was 10 or something like that. It is very satisfying. Rachel has like been trimming my hair with like clippers in lieu, obviously, of me going to the parlor. Like when I do my bangs or stuff, like after you're done trimming it, like it's very satisfying.
By the way, we should get some real haircut scissors, huh?
Yeah, huh? We should stop using our kitchen shears. Yes. Here's another one from Samuel. I apologize if I butchered that. In a recent episode, Griffin talked about power washing videos, and in a similar fashion, I've really come to enjoy car detailing videos. Maybe it's something about knowing how nasty we can get in our cars, or maybe I've discovered something latent in me that just loves shiny shit. Either way, they're all like 30 minutes long, and each is special. I also have been getting served quite a few car detailing
Can
videos.
Can I tell you something kind of embarrassing?
Yes.
I have always wanted to get my car detailed.
Same.
But I am scared that it is too messy to even start that process.
Like, you're going to bring it into the car detailing place and they'll be like, no way.
Well, it's just like, right now I have a big Mickey Mouse stuffed animal in my back seat. Like, what do they do with that stuff?
What are they going to do with that? Yeah.
Like a part of me thinks, like, should I clean it before they clean it?
My admission is more embarrassing than that, which is like, I just am too lazy to get my... I got a birthday present from our friend Justin Minsker,
a gift certificate
to go get my car detailed for like $40 or something like that, and I just didn't go.
I don't know how you make an appointment. I don't know how long it takes. I don't know when a good time to go is. I don't know how you find, you know, there's so much unknown, but I enjoy it and I think it is a great service. And one day,
yeah,
I hope to partake.
One day it would be nice to do, but like also, I have driven approximately 3 times since March.
True.
So now,
wouldn't it be nice to get into a clean car?
In a month when I go get in a car again? Yeah, maybe. Hey, thank you to Bowen and Augustus for the use for our theme song, Money Won't Pay. You can find a link to that in the episode description. And thank you to Maximum Fun for having us on the network. Go check out all the great shows on Maximum Fun, like Stop Podcasting Yourself and Tights and Fights and a whole bunch more at MaximumFun.org. I stepped on the Max Fun thing. You usually do that.
Yeah, I know.
Sorry.
Now I'm trying to figure out. No, I don't have to.
No, please. You're better at it than I am.
If you are looking for new podcast content these days, I would recommend going to MaximumFun.org and looking at all the great shows, comedy, and culture that you can find on that wonderful network.
See, that was so much better.
There are no ads this week.
That is true.
Our intention is to continue to donate ad revenue when possible.
Yes.
To valuable causes at this challenging time. Griffin, do you have a cause that you would recommend folks check out?
I would recommend the Marsha P. Johnson Institute. We donated to that organization for Mabimbam this week, and looking into it is so great. Marsha P. Johnson was a Black trans activist during the Stonewall riots, who was this incredibly important, incredibly incredible figure. And the Marsha P. Johnson Institute goes to support Black trans folks all around the country, and is an incredible cause for so many reasons. So we'll put in a link to the Marsha P. Johnson Institute in the episode description also, if you want to read about that. Otherwise, yeah, stay safe. If you're you know, still going out there protesting, that's incredible. Thank you. Wear a mask. Be safe about it. And I don't know. I'm not your dad or anything. It's not like I'm your dad, but be safe out there. Wash your hands. A lot of people have just stopped washing their hands. And don't get me started. You should be doing it anyway. It's not like they're not going to send out a memo one day like, hey guys, we whipped COVID. You can stop washing your hands. Still do it. Because there could be, Rachel, I'm sorry, poo-poo, pee-pee on there.
This has been a very poop-heavy episode.
I know. Ugh, that's June for you, huh?
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.